Hello and welcome to the Zach Think Share podcast. Today I have Renee with me from the Mom Room. I think this is sort of the main way that I see you these days. I probably consume one of your episodes at least once a month. And which I feel like I have a ton of podcasts I listen to, but I think the level of humanness that you let out in those, and like we get to meet Renee, whereas I think a lot of people, even like myself, I think you get an avatar of a person, which I really appreciate seeing the back end of. Thank you for joining me today and taking the time out. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is exciting.
Renee, you've had a shitload of experiences with celebrities, is what it feels like by now, with your time with Harry. Your time.
Oh my God.
I think you've almost convinced me that you're friends with the Kelce family, even though I know that you're not necessarily, but I think you're in the midst of manifesting that. I wanted to start off with, you made a post recently. Oh shit, I'm realizing I didn't even really introduce you. I just assumed people.
You did. It's the Mom Room.
Okay, all right. I feel like there's a lot more to you. Either way, so I'll say this is that, so Renee has a PhD, which we're going to dive into a little bit later. But I think one of the huge values of your account on Instagram is sharing a lot of yourself, the experience of moms, the default and she-fault parenting aspect of moms. I've learned a lot from you, and I think the Lego video talking about like looking good on paper. And I remember I was part of that. I was a little bit part of that cancel culture back when was the Pancake Gate or something.
Oh yeah.
I think I was upset with you too back then. And then I listened to the podcast and got the rest of the context. I was like, oh shit, she's actually really right about that.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've told you this either, is that back when I first got a little bit of a following in 2021, I made a couple stitches of you on TikTok. And I was pissed that you didn't comment on it. You didn't follow me back. I was like,
can
so...
I just say, okay, when it comes to TikTok,
yeah,
I never, and this is going to shock you, like I hardly know how to use the platform when it comes to like, I just realized the other day that there's the tabs on the top where you can select like people that I follow or people that follow me, like to see their comments. I do not look at anything on TikTok, not one thing. I go on there, I create a post or I post something and then I leave. Like so don't feel bad because I literally don't use the platform.
So Instagram and like podcast land is where you spend the majority of your social media time?
I would say podcast land, probably Instagram, because I'm storying a lot throughout my day. So I have it open more so than TikTok. TikTok, I literally just go to post something. But I'm not a consumer of content. And so I don't spend a lot of time dinking around in like the DMs and like in comments. And my mom gets so mad at me. She's like, you just posted something and did you see somebody commented and they're asking you a question? I'm like, Mom, I'm busy. Like I can't, like, I'm sorry. Like if you know the answer for me on my behalf. Like I just don't spend time doing that. And it's probably, you know, like I know it's not a good thing. And as a person that's like trying to, you know, grow a following and be a creator, I should spend more time doing that, but it's not valuable for me. Like it distracts me. I don't know. It takes a lot of time. Do you ever open a DM and then you're spending like 5 minutes trying to answer it? And I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah, like 100% of the time. Sometimes like I'll open one, I'm like, oh, damn it. Like sometimes I feel like there's no option. I know I learned how to make it unread. So you can be like, okay, I'm going to put this back in my inbox. I just opened up a book. Let's not do that right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally know that feeling. I have to put on my not to do list for the day sometimes to not check my DMs because that's an easy wormhole to fall into.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Sometimes and then it's also, like a good distraction, but
also there's you want to get to DMs from people that you don't necessarily know that follow you and enjoy your content and, you know, are relating to things that you're putting out. But at the same time, I have also the people that I have actual relationships with, you know, that I open my DMs and I see all these people that I know in real life messaging me. And I'm like, well, I should probably respond to those people too. Like, it's just, it's a lot. And then there's my husband texting me from work. And it's like, you know, there's only so much that we can do. So
what is one of the top, like, frequently asked questions you get from, like, your viewers and your followers?
Most of the comments that I receive are things like, oh, I always feel that way, but I never really understood why. It's mostly like I'm sharing something and then someone else is like, oh my God, me too. But like, I never put two and two together, you know, like, why am I annoyed when my husband gets home from work? And I think it's because I sit and actually think, like, why am I annoyed right now? I wanted my husband to come home all day and now he's home, but I'm grumpy. So like, let's unpack this. And then I'll share that whole like nuanced experience online and people are like, oh my God, yes. But in terms of the question that I get asked, you know what, to be honest, lately it's probably like pop culture things. Like, you know, whether it's about the Kelsey's or about Harry Styles or yeah. Like, what does Harry Styles smell like? We get that a lot.
What does he smell like?
It's, you know what?
Human.
It wasn't like something that popped into my mind. So clearly he doesn't smell bad. He's just, there's no real scent there.
Gotcha. Yeah. I don't wear like cologne or anything. That's interesting that people would go for that. I guess people assume that celebrities wear cologne of sorts. A video you made recently about Brittany Mahomes and I thought was a super innocent. I showed it to my wife. Brittany Mahomes, for those that don't know, is the wife of Patrick Mahomes, the quarterback of the Chiefs. They're in the Baltimore Stadium, which is not her home stadium. Looks like they're exiting the field, walking into some side tunnel, and they're clearly separating from Patrick. He's probably going to the locker room. And she asks, where do we go from here, with a little finger twirl, which apparently some people like were really either up in arms about, or like, they're like, what's up with the finger twirl? Like, that's just a normal way to communicate. But she just asked the question. Tell me a little bit about, like, I feel like for me, there's almost like a hint of anger for me. I was like, why are people pissed at this? Like, I was pissed at people for being pissed at it.
Yeah.
What was kind of your like first reaction of like the world's take on it?
I deal with this all the time because in my experience, if you put out content and you are a woman, a mom, and you put out content that is not, it's more like, you know, to the point, you're speaking in a confident way. You're not like questioning yourself. You're not sad or upset. Like, you're just like, no, this is stupid. And, you know, here's why. People don't like that. And I find a lot of the mom creators or creators who are women who their content does very well and they don't necessarily get backlash, they're more presenting themselves in a way that's like, oh, like, I'm, you know, I'm going through such a hard time and here's this. Like, we are more comfortable with women creating content like in that way, as opposed to someone who's just like being direct and confident. And like, I always get the comment, you're so angry all the time. I'm like, am I? Like, am I? Like, I'm probably the happiest person that I know. Like, or is it just because I speak this way, you know? And when I saw the Brittany Mahomes thing, I was like, there's the perfect example of a woman asking a question in a way that anybody else would ask. But because of who she is, like, she's a public figure, people are already, you know, like, she's the wife of a quarterback, and there's all that stuff to it too. But she's literally just asking a question without being vulnerable, or like, she's just directly asking a question instead of being like, oh my, like, where do we go now? Like, how, you know what I mean? Like, we like want her to be in distress. That. Exactly. We want her to be in that kind of a situation. And then it's okay for her to ask a question instead of just being like, where do we go now? Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the thoughts that I've had around it is like, if it were a man, if it were Pat saying that, would anyone say anything? And two, the other thought was like, I'm curious, do you think that, let's say it was like a little bit less of a public figure. So I think Brittany Mahomes there's been some attention on her for being a little bit disrespectful to public, like service workers. Like, I think like a hotel staff, like a restaurant staff, like there've been other comments, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. if people are just projecting those other situations onto this one. And they're like, oh, here she is being a jerk again, versus like, I wonder, like, if that were Taylor asking that, or if that were like Jason Kelsey's wife, which I think a lot of people like her a lot. Yeah. If they heard them saying the same thing, would they feel differently?
Oh, it wouldn't even have been a story, I think. I think you're right in that Brittany already has a target on her back. And for some reason, there's a bunch of people that don't like her. I don't know much about why, but I think if it was anybody else, it wouldn't have even been a story. Gotcha. And if it was a man, they would be like, oh my God, so cute. Look at his little finger twirl when he asked the question.
Yeah. They would have like chose the feminine thing to call out. And in this case, they kind of chose the masculine thing that she showed to call out. Speaking of that, so I think if we were to label some of what we're talking about here is the culture is expecting her to put more emotional labor into her communication, which is identifying and like adjusting the way that she speaks to be like a soft reception from whoever the person is that she's talking with, which I think is the cultural expectation for women in general, is to do the emotional labor. You don't get to be direct. You need to cater to the egos of any and all men that you're surrounded by. And I feel like Travis Kelce, who's obviously been in the news a ton, has been actually doing a pretty good job of showing that he also has emotional intelligence. And now he's been receiving his brother on his podcast with Jason, the Newer Heights podcast. Have you seen some of the, I know we talked before this about two of those clips. Do you have like a favorite? I feel like you're definitely a Kelce fan. Are you a Newer Heights podcast fan as well?
I listen here and there. I do. To be honest, like they talk a lot about football and things that I don't necessarily care about, but when it comes to like the detailed football stuff, I'm like, what's happening? But to hear their communication and how they speak to one another, and I don't know, like just their take on things, like the world is just so obsessed with like the Taylor and Travis thing and how he handles it as a podcast host and someone who goes on a microphone every week when he's constantly, you know, front page news every single day. It's just so nice to hear. And they talk about emotional things as well. And like, I've shared clips of them having conversations where, you know, they're in tears, they're being super vulnerable and emotional. And these are two NFL players, like these big burly, like manly mans, you know, that so many people, young boys especially, look up to. They have a number one podcast. They were both like star and are star NFL players. It's so nice to see. I feel like NFL players are typically in the news for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, it's a breath of fresh air to see them, how they communicate as brothers, how close they are with their family. I just love it. Like, I love it all.
Mm. Yeah. I made a post the other day talking about how I was on like a huge ego trip. I've recently done the collaboration with Kristen Bell. I had like a pretty huge spike in followers on Instagram, and walk around with my recovering man child shirt in downtown Austin, Texas, thinking like, come on, someone's going to notice me. Someone's going to say, oh my God, I follow you. Cause I've now had this experience of being recognized 4 times in public in my home state, which is like, my ego is just through the roof when that happens. There was this moment when I went down there for a retreat that my wife was a part of. It's a sex and intimacy retreat, and the men were going to join for like a part of the Saturday session. And, so I'm in the space of like, okay, I know there's going to be some emotional stuff. Like, I'm probably going to be a puddle of tears at some point this weekend. Don't know when. As I'm like walking around, like hoping that someone sees my puffed out chest or covering my child shirt. This is the guy playing a guitar, and I just decided to be his fan for a couple minutes. And I found myself, I just closed my eyes because I knew I would feel judgment of the people walking by, because it probably looks a little odd, just a man sitting cross-legged 4 feet from someone busking. And I found myself crying like a lot. I had no idea why. There's no words coming through my mind, just like a feeling. And I got more positive attention on that video than I expected. I thought it was going to be just like just one of the posts that I put out that people are like, oh, cool, Zach. Or people giving me shit for, you know, having the ego trip. But someone put a Zach for president and posted it on story. And I feel like I agree that like feeling and like seeing how much people have reacted to having those like healthy masculinity moments has been refreshing to see how refreshed people are by it. It's kind of like a normal part of my life is like, I try to have a good cry here and there. And I think I didn't realize how much people were also kind of starving for hearing those things. Do you have like a favorite moment from their podcast where they're kind of tearing up?
I forget what they were talking about when they, I think it was after the Super Bowl last year, because they played each other in the Super Bowl. I think it was them talking about like reuniting with their mom after the game. Yeah, it was just like, was that what it was? I think that's what it was. Anyways, it was like the cutest thing in the world. And I think as men, like when you were telling that story, is it like correct to assume that men think that them crying and being emotional is a turnoff to other people?
I think so. I was definitely raised in a house where crying was normalized and maybe not celebrated, but there's definitely like a safe place for it. But I know there's tons of guys, especially like being on sports teams growing up, is if you're not crying about losing a basketball game, there's nothing else worth crying about is sort of the feeling out there. So yeah, I think like the boys don't cry, I know that I have like a pretty carefully curated set of content that comes my way. So I don't see that stuff, but I know that there's a ton of that still exists there. Put your mask on, keep your mask on. Don't let any tears show past it.
Yeah,
Jason, and like Kelsey, as parents, tears in his eyes feels really good and right. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking like I have a little boy, he's 5, and never have we, like, I've been very careful. I think it's an instinct for parents when their kids like hurt themselves or are upset to be like, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Like to try and stop the emotion from happening. Even though it doesn't feel like that's what you're trying to do when you're like, okay, it's okay. Like, let's go. Like, come on. Like, you know, you want them to just kind of hurry up and get it over with. Cause as humans, we're just uncomfortable with seeing other people upset. Like, it's uncomfortable. But what I've started to notice in him is, like, the other day we were playing basketball outside and he fell and scraped his arm or his leg or something. And it's almost like he's uncomfortable to start to be upset about getting hurt. And instead of being like, oh, like the reaction you would expect, he like gets up and he's like, oh, it's fine. Like, and he doesn't want me to bring attention to it because I'll be like, oh, like what, like, did you hurt your elbow? Or, and in my mind, I'm like, where is he getting that from? Like, did somebody at school like say something when he got hurt and like cried to the teacher? Or, you know, and it makes me wonder, especially because he's so young, like when that all starts. Because before, like when he was 3.5, 4 years old, if he got hurt, it was like, you know, cry fest, like run to either me or my husband. And it was like a whole thing. And now it's almost like he totally changed. Like he doesn't. Yeah. And so anyway,
did you address that with him?
I haven't yet, because it's only happened a few times recently that I've picked up on it. But now that I know that it's a pattern, I will have to bring it up and just maybe get my husband to talk to him about it. Because I feel like my husband saying something is a little bit different than me saying something. So yeah, I will have to bring it up, but in a situation where like he's not hurt, you know, like a completely unrelated.
You know, I've played around with this before. I've seen videos of it, like where if a kid's having a meltdown, then like the parent to like defuse the meltdown is they have like a ridiculous looking meltdown. I think I saw like a mom, like your kid was freaking out because they wouldn't put cereal in the cereal cart. And then like the kid like goes on the floor, like it's like wiggling around. And then the mom does that. And then the kid's like, oh snap. Like, nope, done with that. And then it's like, then they go on like nothing happened. And I've thought before, so I've been really proud of myself recently. I've found like a cadence to like resolving upsets with our 2.5-year-old, which is, you know, I won't have prepped the situation quite well enough. Like, I don't know, maybe there's a fork on the edge of the table, it's metal or something, and she'll grab it and like, I won't catch it for the first, I don't know, 10 seconds or something. And like, I'll like, hey, honey, like, it's not safe. Like, can I have that back? But no. And then at some point, if she's being too resistant, like, I'll just take it from her because like safety has to come first. And now, okay, all right, we're going to go through a little meltdown. And then I say, are you mad because daddy took away the fork? Yeah. And I'm like, so the reason I took away the fork is because we weren't being safe with it. And it's really pointy and it can hurt us. And I feel like I've just gotten really good at like naming the upset and like the original reason or the expectation that they had that it was safe, because I didn't call them out immediately or like as I saw them reaching for it. And I wonder similarly if so I think there's like there's modeling that Alyssa and I sometimes do with each other in front of her. Is like if I grab the milk, like, and like Alyssa goes to grab, like, no, not your turn. Like, can I have it for another 30 seconds? Okay. Like, and we'll like have these like playful moments in between the two of us that's modeling for our daughter. I'm wondering, almost like it might be a little bit of acting, but like if your husband, right, if like, let's say, cuts himself or something in front of your son and like, he's like, oh, that really hurts. And you'd be like, hey, are you okay? And like, have him model like what maybe like a healthy, not pushing your emotions down experience looks like for your son.
Yeah. Now that you say that, I'm like, oh God, every time my husband hurts himself, he like makes this big reaction and I'm like, oh my God, here we go. You know, it's probably my fault.
Oh, wow.
Cause I'm always like, oh, like, cause my husband's so dramatic. Like he'll like, you know, hit his elbow on the counter or something. And it's like, oh, and I'm like, really? So maybe I need to be more caring to my husband.
Yeah. You know what? It would be interesting because I know that there have been moments in my life where I know there have been moments of like almost weaponized overt reactions where it's like, I know there's been moments where we're both probably sleep deprived. She's left something out in the middle of the floor. I'll like stub my toe on it on the way back to bed because I was just putting her 2.5-year-old back down. And like, I'll say, fuck, like just loud enough to like disturb her from her peaceful slumber. Because like, I'm pissed that she's napping peacefully and left something out in my, like, it, you know, it's pitch black and I'm walking through the room. So I'm wondering, I don't want to, I'm not accusing anyone of this. I'm wondering if, like, if he's banging his elbow, like if the eye roll is, hey, you okay, honey? Like, I wonder if those calm down a little bit.
But this is an experiment that I'm willing to partake in, and I will keep you posted.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I think that if it were met with, I know that, if Alyssa, if I hurt myself and she's like, hey, are you okay? I feel like in the future, I'm a little bit less feel like, I think it's a cry for help in some ways.
No, maybe I can see that.
And less aggressive words, but it's like, you know, well, I feel really cool that we may have just identified part of where that comes from.
Literally, it was like therapy. I'm like, oh shit, like look how I respond to my husband getting hurt.
So yeah. This weekend retreat that we're a part of, a huge part of it for me was identifying like almost like masculine, feminine traits in like what we do. I still feel super uncomfortable with some of that language and like talking about masculine, feminine, because the only time I hear masculine is in a terrible context, like online right now. If he hurts himself, let's say like he slices his hands open with like a knife or something, how do you think you would expect him to react to that? What's a moment where you wouldn't roll your eyes or be like, ugh?
Do you want to know what's really interesting? I remember talking about this exact thing with Dr. Tracy Dalgleish. And what it is, my dad growing up, like, he's very, like, even, like, almost all, you know, our family always uses, like, humor to diffuse everything and nothing's a big deal, like all that kind of stuff. So I am not used to, he's also never had a sip of alcohol in his life. Like I've never seen him. So like very, very stable.
Stoic. Like,
not stoic, very like funny and like tells stories and, you know, very personable. Like everybody loves my dad, but never like very even keeled. So my husband is the exact same way. But I grew up not really seeing like a range of, let's say, like really negative emotions or like getting hurt, being like, ah, like I'm just not comfortable with my husband when he like stubs his toe or if he's like in a bad mood. It's almost like I'm not comfortable with him being upset or not
like
a stable.
Full expression of whatever that like moment is.
Yes. And I remember explaining that situation, like, why am I so irritated when my husband like stubs his toe, you know, like it bothers me. Like, and Tracy was like, you're taking on like his, like it's affecting you as opposed to me being like, oh my God, that sucks. Like, are you okay? Like, I'm like, oh, like I don't want him to have those feelings, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. I'm uncomfortable because he is like my solid, stable person, you know? So when you see that person not be what their baseline is, like what they always are, you're like, ugh, like what do I do now?
I almost wonder if it's like, if it projects. So like, if he's your, like your rock there, does that project into you? Does your like subconscious make that mean, well, if he's not stable, then I don't have a stable person in my life, or something like that almost?
I don't know. Perhaps. I should go to therapy and like talk about all these things, because I want to learn like more about it. You know, in our day to day, like this is not a big thing, but it's something that I've picked up on just because I'm self-aware and I do this for a living. I talk to people and half these people are psychologists and I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, but it's interesting. And I think a lot of couples experience that, like you're, instead of just being like, oh, my partner's a human, they're in a bad mood, they had a bad day, we take it on. We're like we think, not that it necessarily has something to do with us, but it almost affects our mood then, instead of just being like, oh, they're a human, you know, that happens to me too sometimes. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, thinking about like the experience I had this weekend is like, a lot of times I think we look at the person next to us as like, we expect them almost to be a little bit of like an avatar of like a masculine or a feminine presence sort of all the time, almost kind of like the Brittany Mahomes thing. Like we expect her to be a certain way. And when those things aren't congruent, it feels like there's something wrong here that we don't want to exist.
Yep. Yeah. It's odd, but I think it happens, but I'm sure it happens a lot, but people don't necessarily, like, you're not aware of it.
Yeah. I hadn't intended for this. I did want to see you cry at some point today, but I didn't necessarily expect this to be any sort of therapy session, as I'm certainly not a therapist. I want to switch gears for a second here. One of the things I think that I've learned best from you, from consuming your content, let's see, over almost like 2.5 years now. I feel like I would like to think that we've become friends over probably the past year when you invited me onto your podcast. And I feel like, when you start tagging people in random things, like, oh, I think they would have a good reaction to this. Is when you have that. But I feel like whenever I see things about default parenting, and or like, I think the phrase that you had used that really hit home for me originally was, it looks good on paper. Mm. It was like mowing the lawn or washing the car. Why do you think that that is a super important message? Probably from like the comments that you've seen, the DMs that you've received, like, why is it that people are having such a hard time wrapping their head around that one?
I think it's so common. Like, there's actual research on the fact that in heterosexual marriages with kids, men tend to gravitate towards things like household tasks that remove them from the home. So cutting the grass, doing stuff with the cars outside, in the garage, taking the garbage out, you know, running errands, whatever it might be. But I don't think, and again, it goes back to how people are always saying like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. Because on paper, we're so conditioned to be like, oh my God, like our partner is doing so much. I can't be annoyed or upset or, you know, like, I'm taking care of the kids. So already if you're upset that they're out cutting the lawn, you almost don't want to admit to yourself that, you know, if you're a stay-at-home mom all week and then Saturday morning rolls around and you're like, finally, my husband's home, I can chill, have a coffee, and they get up and start cutting the grass. And now you're just still in the house watching the kids, which you have been doing all week. You almost feel like you can't be mad about that because you're a mom and you're hashtag blessed and you love your kids. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I think it's hard for people to even admit to themselves that I'm irritated right now because my husband is doing XYZ outside and I'm in the house taking care of the kids, being the quote unquote default parent. And the biggest thing that, you know, people did not understand, you included, was the pancake thing. And I remember it was an episode with Tracy from like years ago. And this was in quarantine, which all of the default parent stuff that I talk about comes from my experience in quarantine, because that is when I got to experience what being a stay-at-home parent feels like. Times 10, because it was quarantine, right? I couldn't take him anywhere. We couldn't have visitors, like nothing. But Saturday morning rolls around and my husband's not... He is a physician. So he was working during quarantine. Like he was out of the house. So Saturday morning rolls around and he starts making this big pancake breakfast. And I'm sitting there pissed. And I'm like, why? Like, again, on paper, people are like, oh my God, her poor husband, he's making pancakes. And she's like upset that he's making breakfast for his family. Like people just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And I was like, no, I have been watching my son nonstop. And he was at an age that was like, you need to be on them. It was like 18 months old or something all week. And now Saturday morning, I just want to like chill, have my coffee, you know, maybe go put away the clothes that have been bugging me all week that are sitting on the washing machine. Like I have my own things that I want to do that I haven't been able to do all week. And he's up making pancakes. And so I made a video about that and people lost their damn minds. But people were also like, oh my God. Yeah. Like I get it. And that's where all of this default parent stuff came from. And I remember I had merch at the time and I think I had a t-shirt out that was like, F your pancakes. And like the whole thing was like, they can have toast, you know, like you don't have to make this big pancake breakfast and remove yourself from the living room where me and Milo are off doing your own thing. Like, if anything, I'll make the pancakes. Like, let me do something.
I made a video recently, which I'd been wanting to make for over a year and it got, you might know I run cohorts for men that are trying to like understand mental load and default parenting. We read through the FAIR playbook. It finally got brought up, was talking about this, and I came up with a new phrase. I think it's a new phrase. I could be wrong, but weaponized responsibility. So we're talking about how, so I recognized I did this a couple months ago where my version of pancakes or mowing the grass is doing the dishes, which is like for so many moms out there are starving for their men to just do the fucking dishes. And we're getting ready for the day. The shared responsibilities that Alyssa and I have in the morning is, well, our dog passed away last week, but it had been getting the dog food and water, getting the cats fed, feeding the goats and opening up the barn so they can wander around, and then getting like lunch ready and like our daughter out the door for daycare. And my responsibility that I own full conception planning execution for in our house is dishes. So there's like my checklist of like, okay, I got to do the dishes. I know that the trash is my responsibility. And then like my job is my responsibility. And then there's the shared responsibilities, which is all those things. And we agreed that whoever's just up first in the morning starts doing those things. We've been trying to cut out coffee, but for a while it was like, just get the coffee started.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, I would skip one of those things on the shared list and I would just start doing dishes because that's on my checklist, but it's not on our checklist together. And so similarly, I think a lot of guys are feeling pressure from the culture for maybe their upbringing, like the grass is my responsibility. The cars are my responsibility. Getting money into the bank, the shared bank account is my responsibility. So me making sure those boxes are checked comes first before having the shared boxes of making sure, you know, our kid is well taken care of for on a Saturday morning when they're not working. And so there have been moments, I don't think it sounds like your husband probably wasn't weaponizing it, but I know that there have been moments where I've been spiteful, like, No, I'm gonna let you do like the dog and the cat food and the goats and step out into the cold weather so I can do get my check boxes done and do the dishes. I know that that's happened before. I've become aware of it and it's no longer weaponized, but like weaponized, it's like a heavy term for sure. But does that almost resonate a little bit where it's like they're checking off a checkbox that's on their list and their items rather than acknowledging the shared list?
Yeah, in a way that we worked around this, and it's not even necessarily something that my husband in his mind was like, yeah, I'm going to get up and I'm going to make pancakes. Like in his mind, he's like, pancakes are fun. Like Milo loves pancakes. He is an acts of service person. So that's also huge. Like to him, he's like, I'm not just going to sit in the living room and, you know, have a coffee. Like I'm going to get up, I'm going to make pancakes, like be productive, you know? But how we started to navigate weekends during quarantine, now it's like less of an issue, but we would plan out like, okay, what are things that you want to get done this weekend? What are some things that I want to get done? What are some things that we want to do as a family together? Like, oh, on Sunday afternoon, we should go to the park, or we should like, you know, walk the trail in the neighborhood, go down to the pond. Like, what are things that you want to do? My husband would be like, I want to wash the cars and, you know, go to that specialty grocery store to pick up like a, like XYZ. Okay. I want to organize my closet and get stuff out of the house to donate. So you have like a clear idea of, okay, Saturday morning, now what's going to happen? It's almost like you have to communicate about it before instead of just letting the weekend happen. And now you're pissed off because where the hell's my husband? He's outside mowing the lawn. Like, okay. Yeah. So it's really about like planning ahead. If you're in a situation where weekends are precious because during the week, one parent is like the default parent, the other one's working out of the house. Of course, the weekend comes and you both want to get certain things done. It's just figuring out who's going to do what when. You know, there's a yoga class I want to go to on Sunday. My husband and I do like a shared calendar thing now. So I know like he has a dinner meeting on this day, or I put my yoga classes in, and that's been working well as well. But yeah, it's just communicating and being like, we don't need pancakes every Saturday.
As yummy as a nice fat carb rush is. Yeah. One of the things I've been actually dying to ask for a long time, and I know this is a different subject, but I know that you have a PhD. I know it's been sprinkled in here and there, but it occurs to me that do you talk about it at length and like what your education is in?
I think I've done episodes here and there, maybe just like one solo episode a long time ago where I explained like what my actual dissertation was on and stuff like that. But I do have a background in attachment. Like part of my PhD, my supervisor was very heavily involved in research. So I had the opportunity to do really specialized training programs. One was in defense mechanisms so that we could help out with some of the research projects that he was working on. So defense mechanisms, attachment, and then I also did one in reflective functioning. Those three things are like invaluable. I wish everyone in the world could do those trainings or like even read up on those topics because it's just fascinating. But those things I would say have shaped the way I think. Like when I'm talking to people, like I pick up on things. My actual research, like what my dissertation was on, and all of my research for my master's and my PhD was in eating disorders. So my programs were in psychology, but I specialized in, I guess you would call it like health research. My supervisor was a clinical psychologist. He ran the research department for the eating disorders clinic in Ottawa. And my dissertation was specifically on the efficacy of psychotherapy for eating disorders. Do you know what a meta-analysis is?
I feel like I should, because I feel like I hear that a lot. Yeah, go so for it. I don't know.
It's basically a huge research study that compiles every single piece of research on a certain topic and puts all the numbers together to figure out, like, overall, what is the answer to this research question? Yeah. And then you can break it up, like, obviously, with statistics, all the different ways that you can look at the data that's been collected on this one topic. So mine was on psychotherapy for eating disorders.
So you did a meta-analysis on the psychotherapy for eating disorders.
Yeah, it was nuts. And this is why it took me, I feel like I was in my PhD program. I also had a baby in my PhD program, but like 6 years. Jesus. No, more than that. Yeah, like I was in school forever. I was in school till I was 34.
I'm tempted to ask, like, what's the one paragraph answer to the question? I don't know if that's possible, but like, what
to the like 500 page document that I wrote.
if you had to boil down a little bit of it to almost like adjust the behavior of somebody that doesn't understand. Let's see. So maybe we'll use me as the layman that we're speaking to here. So what I think I understand about eating disorders is that it's like a maladaptive way that probably, I'm imagining, mostly women use it to feel like they have control over their bodies in a world where they're told that everything about their bodies is wrong.
I feel like the actual reason can vary from person to person. There is a lot of trauma in that population, and it's also very much underdiagnosed in men, as you can imagine why. It's not really, I feel like most things when it comes to mental health are probably underdiagnosed in men because they're less likely to seek help for whatever's going on. But yeah, eating disorders are extremely common, like prevalent. When you think about the severity of them, it's shocking how prevalent they are, especially how prevalent they're becoming in younger children. Like the inpatient unit is always full. There's like wait lists. Like these are young kids. And as a parent who has a child that is suffering with an eating disorder, it must be incredibly difficult because treatment is so difficult to get into or extremely expensive. So as a parent, like when people find out what I did my research in, they always like tell me like, oh my God, my, you know, so-and-so is going through this. And I feel so bad for parents in that situation because it's a difficult thing to treat. And it is, you probably feel helpless and like you don't know what to do. They have, you know, like these specialty places that you can get help, but like so expensive. And then what is actually available? I'm in Canada, so it's a little bit different, but what is actually available through the healthcare system is like you're on a wait list. It's just not ideal. And I feel for people that are in that situation.
Knowing that if Milo were to somehow end up with an eating disorder, how do you think that your research has informed maybe some of the language that you use around him or the actions you take around him in food?
Oh, that's a good question. Food is like a non-thing. That's how I grew up. I like have the healthiest relationship with food of anybody that I know. It was just never a thing. We were never not allowed to have something. If Milo asks me for, Mom, can I have an Oreo? Sometimes I'll be like, let's like just finish up your snack that you're having and then you can have an Oreo. Like, I'm not just like a free for all, like eat whatever you want. But if he asks for something, chances are he's going to be able to get that, because I don't want to create any kind of barrier between him and food. Like, it's, if you make something a big deal, it's going to be a big deal to them. So if growing up, he was very restricted in the amount of, let's say, sugar he could have, you know, like when he is living on his own now, like that is like, you know, it's the same with how we treat alcohol in our society. It's like this like hush hush, like only adults, like it's this crazy thing. Like you have to be this age to be able to drink it. And then people turn that age and they go nuts and they are like blackout drunk every weekend. Yeah. You know, they don't have that problem in Europe and where they don't make a big deal about alcohol. When you make something a big deal, it becomes a big deal to your kid. So when we have a birthday cake or something, like he can have as much as he wants, you know? I'm not going to be like only one piece. Like I'm just very aware of things like this. And again, like he also eats fruits and vegetables and he has like a very balanced diet. But I try not to make a big deal about food.
Interesting. Yeah, except I mean, as you're talking, I'm like, damn, I definitely make sugar a big thing. I think I watched that documentary in like 2015, 16, Fed Up, which talks about like how sugar's in friggin' everything. Yep. And I have this like, I have a not very good relationship with sugar, I think. When I have the opportunity and like, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say like, I don't like sugar. Like, I think it's terrible, but I also myself am not going to be like, oh, I'm never going to have sugar. No, like the donut place that is amazing downtown here where I live has this like beautiful box of Valentine's donuts that they're putting out for Valentine's Day. And I'm like, I want that box. Like, you know, like I'm not going to ever, and this is with regard to anything, like I'll never be like, I'm vegan, I'm this. Like, I hate labeling myself when it comes to any of these things, because if I go to a dinner party and somebody's like, oh, we have this like special, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh no, I can't eat it. If I want to eat it, I'm going to eat it. And then I find when you label yourself as something, you're just setting yourself up for failure or like not being able to enjoy something if one day you change your mind and want to have it. So, but I avoid sugar as much as possible. But with Milo, it's just about exposing him to all the other things too. Like, if I hand him a plate of Ritz crackers and cantaloupe or like grapes, he will eat the fruit first, which is crazy because Ritz crackers are so good. But like, he has been exposed to everything, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking about like what's my reaction? It's like the other day they had like cosmic Oreos or something. They made, instead of white, it's like purple and pink and it's got Pop Rocks in it. And I was like, I didn't even read the Pop Rocks part, but I was like, oh, there's a new flavor, I need that. And then I ate the whole pack by myself in about a day and a half. I have a, like my former colleagues that we had snacks like at the office, they're like, Zach is like a snack machine. It's like a problem and it's like comedic and they make fun of me for it. But yeah, it's interesting thinking about how I'm probably going to want to adjust my behavior around like gristling at when I see like cake or Oreos around our daughter, and how everything in me like wants to say like, oh, like I think I've actually gaslit my 2.5-year-old saying, those aren't Oreos, or like we've had some in the cupboard and she like Oreo. Or cookie, and I'll say, oh no, I don't think that's what that is. And then I'll say, do you want something else? And just try to have her forget that that's there. And I, is probably a mixture of, I feel like it's not terrible parenting because she's young enough that I don't think that that's an issue, but at the same time recognizing like, I think it's probably a deeper fear of my own that like, I'm going to give her too much sugar and like, she's going to be like sugar dependent. Like the kids that I saw in that documentary where the kid was like 14 years old and weighed like 300 pounds or something. Like, your research, you said, was a meta-analysis on psychotherapy around it. So it sounds like you're an expert in looking at how people effectively train those like eating disorders out of them. Am I kind of getting that right?
It's just like going into therapy for an eating disorder. So there's all different kinds of psychotherapy. You can do like CBT, you can do dialectical behavioral therapy, you could do, there was like a few different ones. If you look at all the research on RCTs, which are randomized controlled trials, those are very expensive studies to do. So there's not a ton when it comes to eating disorders, unfortunately. It's probably like an underfunded area of, you know, research. But a lot of people will, there's best practices when it comes to treatment for eating disorders, and CBT is usually at the top. Because it has the most research on it. But when you really pull out the effect sizes and look at how people got better and did it last long term and all that kind of stuff, there are more options than just CBT, which was like the biggest thing that we found. But also it is worth mentioning that for research to be done on psychotherapy, usually for any research, actually, the people that you involve in your research study, you want them to check certain boxes. So it's like they have no addiction issues. They don't have, maybe it's like a personality disorder. They've never been diagnosed. They specifically meet the criteria for a specific eating disorder. So there's like anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder. But then there's also this huge category, eating disorder not otherwise specified, which is you're not, like, you're suffering. You have all these characteristics, but you don't necessarily fit into a box of one of these specific diagnoses, so you're not included in the research. Well, that's like 72%, 75% of the eating disorder population falls under that category. So now you're not including them in the controlled trials, so there's no actual research on them going through these therapies. So that is also very interesting. So like before you asked like how my training and what I've done has kind of made me look at the world, I can't stand these accounts that use clickbait little sentences that they pulled from a news article or like a research study, because research is so nuanced and there's so much that goes into it that has to be considered before you can just be like, this is the best option if you are a parent with a child this age. And it's like, really? Like, where did that come from? Or like, don't ever do this as a parent. Like, here's why. It's like, oh my God, it drives me nuts. Because if you actually look at the raw data, the research, usually at the bottom of the research study, there's like a discussion section, which is like, here's why this research shouldn't be basically generalized to every single person in the world, and here's all the things that you need to consider before you know. It's just, it's unfortunate that that's how most people get their information, is like these clickbait
like things. I'm even hearing myself in that crappy clickbait. I asked you to boil down a 500 page document.
No, I know it, well, which like I try to give nuance and like explain, but it's true, like people just want the one sentence, and it's like, well, God, it's so complicated. But yeah, so
I feel like the one sentence takeaway I'm getting from this is, don't try to boil stuff down into one sentence.
No, and don't believe every single thing, like, oh, research shows this, and it's like, okay, but I have more questions, you know. And usually those questions yeah, don't get so, answered.
I feel like whenever I see videos like that, research shows, or like there was a statistic on this, like I believe it at a way higher percentage than I probably ought to when I see that. And I'm lazy. I don't go and look to see what was the article that they referenced. Oh, let's read through the article. Let's see what that step. I don't do any of that.
No. And the thing is, like, the majority of the population can't just pull up an article, because most of these like actual research studies they're gatekeeped. Like they're behind a paywall. So nobody is actually like seeing the actual study. And then if you were to actually see it, majority of people are not going to be able to understand what the hell's going on, because it's not written like a news article. It's like an academic paper.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of how I would want to better inform my parenting around food and sugar. I'm my biggest proud moment as a parent is like our child eats broccoli very well. I think that's like our biggest win in the win category, like
crushing it.
We'll cut it up so there's not a whole lot of stems, it's mostly like the leafy part, and like put a little bit of salt on it and she'll eat it for snack. Not 100%, but like pretty frequently that's the vegetable we put in her lunchbox. But I think the pointing out of like not having a large reaction to seeing things, or like doing like a heavy, like a really intentional job of like limiting something, and being a little bit less like making it a thing, recognizing that that has an impact in itself is pretty important. Like recently, I decided to stop drinking alcohol back in November. I was like, I'll do it for a New Year's resolution. And I was like, if I do that, I'm not going to follow it. So I'm just going to start now in November. And I said to myself, okay, when I hit a million followers total across platforms, I'll have a drink with a friend. Maybe we'll get a six pack or something. And I've, my uncle has a vodka company. And I have one bottle that's not been opened. And I said, once I had a million followers on one platform, then I'll crack that open and drink it neater on the rocks. And recently my sister-in-law got engaged. And so my father-in-law opened up like a bottle of scotch and I had that. It's interesting thinking about how I'm like making it a thing, but I think I'm trying to make it a thing in a positive way. Is like, alcohol is meant to be like a way to celebrate things rather than like an escape from like a tough day. Cause there was definitely been parts of my life where it's like when I was a sales rep and, you know, our goal is to book meetings. If I had a good day and I booked three meetings, we're getting beers tonight. That's a win.
Yeah.
And then, when I switched roles to an account executive where it was, you know, I had to close multi-$1,000 deals. It was a lot harder. And so the alcohol we had left over from the wins from last, like, oh man, it was a tough day. Let's take the edge off. And I realized that was like a not great way to frame its use, and it's expensive as shit. So trying to reframe that.
No, it's similar. Like I always think about that. Like alcohol is brutal. Like it's terrible. Like but there are some situations, like a few weekends ago, my husband and I, what did we watch? Oh, I don't remember what we watched. But anyways, he like opened a bottle of wine and I was like, oh my God. Like at first he asked me, he's like, do you want a glass of wine? And I was like, no, like I rarely drink. I'm all about like drinking my chia seed water and like lemon water, all this like BS. So I'm like, oh no. And then he opened it and I was like, oh my God, I do want a glass of wine. And I had like two glasses of wine and I was like, this was so fun. Like I had wine, like it was so fun. But it's what you said. It's like, I'm not going to be like, no, like I'm never going to have alcohol, because I know there's going to be situations where I'm going to want to have a drink, and I don't want to be mad at myself now for having a drink because 3 months ago I said I'm not going to have alcohol. So my whole thing is like, if I want something, I'm going to have it, but I have to also understand like how it affects me, and do I actually enjoy it? Is it worth having? Like Tim Hortons just put out their old school donuts. Mm-hmm. And do you have Tim Hortons where you live?
No.
Oh, okay.
Lucette don't think
sorry.
So.
Sorry for you. so anyways, they put out these old school donuts that they used to sell like years ago, like vintage donuts. And one of them is my favorite. I'm trying to avoid gluten. I don't really like having sugar. And I'm like, I'm getting it. I'm going to eat it. Like, it's like a limited time thing. Like, they brought out my new favorite, like my favorite donut from when I was a kid. I'm eating the donut and I'm going to enjoy myself, you know? Mm. It's just like how you look at things and not to be so, I can't have this. I'm stopping this, and just being mindful. That's what it is. Like, just be mindful.
Yeah. I think it was 2016. I similarly said, okay, I'm taking just a year off of alcohol just because I feel like I'm less in control than I want to be. And halfway through the year, Alyssa was so annoyed with me. She's like, you get so uppity about like your anti-alcohol. Like, you go into a party and like, would you like a drink? No, I don't drink. And I was like, so on my high horse about it. and like, and by the end of the year, she's like, please never do that again. Like, it took a couple heart to hearts of me almost like shaming people for it, more so because I was ashamed within myself and I was like projecting that on people. And so I think I've gone about it at a much healthier pace this year and recognizing it's much more about like, I want to cut back on the finances of it. And like, it's, I think someone put it like, having like alcohol and like drinking and having a hangover is like borrowing happiness from tomorrow. And I was like, yeah, I like the idea of, I'm enjoying being a morning person and I don't want to borrow productivity from tomorrow for like the enjoyment of tonight.
Yep.
What things are you working on this year? I know that you got your Mom Room podcast is just crushing and consistently just I know if I just want to get a snapshot of Renee's life, I can always find one of the solo episodes. What are there other things or aspects of that you're working on this year that you're excited about?
I would love to do, and I've been saying this for like a year now, I want to do a live event. Like, I want to start doing live podcasts. It's just like logistically difficult to, not only logistically, but also like once you book something, like boom, like you're committed to that date. And like, you know,
that's so exactly what this was. I was like, I'm going to do a podcast. Renee offered in December to like show me the ropes. All right, Renee, put some time on my calendar. And so I've had 4 episodes because of this was on the calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. So live event, I would love to do, traveling more to do more in-person interviews. Again, logistically, it's just difficult. How many times do you book something with someone and then they're like, oh, like, can we reschedule? So it's like, if you travel somewhere and then it doesn't work out, it's like a big, big thing. I'm working on starting a Patreon because I've always wanted to do a daily podcast. But if I were to do a daily podcast, it's going to be very much so like a, almost like a audio journal, kind of like my solos used to be. My solos, I'm trying to make them more topical now and like educational, as opposed to I'm just talking about random stuff. Patreon. So it would be probably almost like a daily episode, like emergency episodes. Like, sometimes something happens, like we have some like big thing and like, I just want to like spew out for like 10 minutes and then like upload it, do like a live stream once a month. And then I used to make vlogs, which was so fun. And so I kind of wanted to add maybe like one vlog a month, but again, it's not like set in stone, but it's something that I'm thinking about doing. I started the podcast with my sister, which is like the funnest thing in the world because I just get to like talk about pop culture and random nuanced situations that we all experience being a human, which has nothing to do with parenting or being a mom. So it doesn't really fit in the Mom Room. But I was like, Liza, you want to start a podcast just so I could talk about all these things? She's like, sure. So that's actually been doing incredible. And it's called Insufferable. I've been wanting to start a second podcast forever. So finally, we launched that on January 1st this year.
It sort of like there's, I feel like as a content creator that I've now like kind of developed my name as the mental load guy almost. It's a little bit, creates a little bit of a box, and like, you're like, wow, there's so much more I would love to talk about. And it's like, this is how people see this platform. They don't really want to hear much past mental default parenting decision fatigue. So this is like outlets that you're discovering a inner desire for, that you're deciding to make a separate channel for, that mm-hmm. you can express it, but at the same time, you're not like muddying the message and like the intention of the original podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Which I'm so happy that a long time ago I started the Mom Room podcast Instagram account, because now that is separate from my personal account. Even though I talk about similar things on my personal account, I also talk about other things and share content that's just everyday life kind of stuff. So I'm really happy that I did that a long time ago, started a separate account. Cause at first I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is, you know, silly. And now it's going to surpass my personal account.
That's crazy. I just realized that I think most of the times that I see you, it's from the Renee account rather than the Mom Room account.
Yeah.
Which I don't think
the Mom Room account is more like niche.
Yeah.
And it's like a lot of podcast 178 clips
and 174.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Recently I was all excited because my Instagram passed my TikTok, which I thought was never going to happen.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
14 months ago, I was at 1,000 followers on Instagram and I was at 165,000 on TikTok. And this whole year, 2023, it caught up.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely that is insane. So cool.
So people can expect to keep receiving Mom Room, find Insufferable if you want more pop culture hot takes, and watching sisterly bonding, kind of like what we see with the Kelsey brothers.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one comment that I saw from Travis, or maybe it was one of the two, was saying like how beneficial the podcast was for them to just bond for like an hour a week.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that's going to be something that I'm going to have my wife come on like regularly onto this podcast. And I think it's like a good opportunity to give other people just like a glimpse inside of like what you're thinking, how you communicate in a consumable way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sweet. Like I get to talk to my sister for an hour every week about like fun stuff, you know? And my husband has come on the Mom Room many times, which is more topical episodes because he's a urologist. But mm-hmm. even still, like we came down here the other night and recorded for an hour in the studio. And I was like, this is so fun. Like we actually just talked for like an hour.
That's great. Is there anything else you want to sort of plug here if people have made it to 113 minutes in?
Oh my gosh. No, really just the podcast. That's always kind of been my focus. So yeah, go listen to the Mom Room.
Awesome. Well, Renee, thanks for coming on and joining me. And this has been fun. I'm glad that I feel like I have a pretty decent understanding of what you're an expert at besides talking about default parenting.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Thank you.
All right. Well, follow the Mom Room, and I'm sure we'll have some short clips that come out of this episode as well.